Today we'll talk about a perfect storm, an amazing natural phenomenon that doesn't come along too often, and how nature sometimes doesn't want to cooperate. This episode is brought to you by Dougal. Dougal is a legendary photo lab that is now at your fingertips. ShopDougal.com is the expanded online storefront of Dougal Visual Solutions, a leader and innovator in printing for over 50 years. At ShopDougal.com, you can now have instant access to world-class printing solutions such as HD photo and archival pigment prints, acrylic prints, canvas prints, metal prints, photo books, and more, and they ground ship for free. Give us your best work, we'll give you ours. Find more at shopdougal.com/topfloor. That's shopdougal.com/topfloor. And use promo code TOPFLOOR at checkout to get 25% off your first order. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 833 for July the 26th, 2018.
Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right.
Hey, and welcome. It's a Saturday. My name is Chris Marquardt, and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor. And usually I strive to release an episode on Thursday or maybe on Friday. And then sometimes if things get too busy, I might have to slip one over to the weekend. And there's a reason why this episode is late, and I deliberately delayed it because yesterday, Europe and, of course, Germany saw an amazing lunar eclipse. The longest lunar eclipse of the century, with a wonderful combination of things that made something of a kind of a perfect storm here. Well, first of all, it was the really long eclipse. Then the second thing is it happened at the same time as sunrise. And that gave it, from a light point of view, it gave it this, well, it happened during the blue hour. It means you have the moon and the eclipse in front of a dark blue sky, which is an amazing color contrast. Also happened directly over the horizon. Another amazing thing, which posed amazing opportunities to combine the eclipse with things on the horizon, like nature, architecture, and stuff. And then, as lunar eclipses tend to be, it was going to be deep red. They call that a blood moon. You know, the light that still hits the moon is the one coming around the Earth, so it goes through all the atmosphere. It's like the sunset, pretty much. Goes through all the atmosphere, loses all its blue side of the visual spectrum, and makes this whole thing, well, blood red or copper red. Let's say copper red, okay? Just imagine that behind a silhouette of something. In our case here, where we live, we have some wind turbines nearby. And I went on the photographer's ephemeris, where like you can see when the moon is going to be where and how high above the horizon and so on. And I checked where the moon would be and the elevation. And it turned out I could easily position myself at a place like out in the field somewhere where I would be able to catch the blood red lunar eclipse behind a silhouette of a spinning wind turbine. That's a photo I can imagine. I can pre-visualize that pretty well. But that's not all. Planet Mars is also out and nicely visible right now. It's pretty bright in the sky. And as an added bonus, even though that would be kind of difficult to get into the same shot, at around 10:30 p.m. yesterday, pretty much at the peak of the eclipse, when it was the darkest and the reddest, the moment where the blood moon was like the bloodiest, the copperiest, the ISS, the International Space Station, came zooming across the sky. And in a way that was brightly lit by the sun. So you have the blood red moon directly over the horizon with silhouettes of wind turbines in front of it while Mars is in the sky and the ISS is zipping overhead. And in addition, we have a bit of a heat wave right now. For weeks, we haven't had clouds and stuff. So, and temperatures up to like 36 Celsius, which is like 97 Fahrenheit. No rain, no nothing, no cloud cover, clear skies, just a perfect combination. So, that was yesterday. So 2 nights ago, Like, people started looking outside, just kind of a preparation run. You know, the full moon is out there, and everything's perfect. The clear sky, clear weather, excellent visibility. And then, yeah, came last night, the real performance. And we went out at 9 p.m. last night. And we arrived at the field we needed to get to around 15 minutes before the moonrise. And I set up the tripod and put the camera on the tripod. Just went for the 7D Mark II with the 70 to 300 lens on it. Long enough to... Well, the problem shooting the moon with a too long focal length is that you end up... Well, shooting the moon with a long focal length is not a problem whatsoever. If you look at a full moon, it is super bright. You can... It's almost as bright as daylight. So if you crank the ISO a bit, you can shoot this handheld. But... What I wanted to do is, first of all, I wanted to have the silhouette of the wind turbine, and I wanted the moon in there, but the during the eclipse, well, there's only reflected light from the Earth pretty much hitting the moon, so there's not much brightness on there. We're talking about an exposure in the seconds. And when you do that with a too long focal length, you will find out how fast the moon is, and it is very fast. So more than a second at a longer focal length is kind of not the way you want to go, because, yeah, then you won't have the moon all sharp and everything. You might need a tracker, like a star tracker or something, to track the moon. But in that case, I opted for kind of not using the longest focal length I could, and include some of the environment in the shot. And then we were out there, everything set up. I also brought the drone just in case, and I also planned to shoot some video. I mean, the turbines moving in front of the moon. I just thought that would look cool. And then we waited, and nothing. Because the entire horizon towards the direction of the moonrise was filled with mist. And it extended, where we live, it extended quite high. Like, okay, so, again, I used the tools. I used the photographer's ephemeris. I used photo pills. There are tons of apps that do that, and they give you a visual of where the moon is going to be and how high it's going to be at what time. And where we live, it's super flat. So, 3, 4, 5 degree high moon is definitely going to be above the horizon. There are no mountains here or anything that would be in the way, at least not in the direction that the moon was rising. It was perfect. It was really perfect. Everything was fine. Everything was cool. Apart from the fact that the first time in over a week was mist on the horizon, and it extended to, I think, 20 to almost 30 degrees up above the horizon. And in order to get that shot with the wind turbines and the silhouetting and everything being in the same shot in a nice composition, I needed the moon to be maybe 5, 6, 7 degrees above the horizon. That's all I needed. And that meant it was still behind the mist and there was nothing to see here. So Monica and I were out in the field, just sitting there on the ground, waiting, looking at the horizon, staring at the horizon. And then we just, after a while, we just gave up and walked back past a few other photographers who also were like, shrugging. Okay, let's go home. The moon did come out much later, above those 20 to 30 degrees. And of course, that was after the eclipse was over and it was the full moon again. And that was that. There were lots of places here in Germany. I've seen lots of photos posted on Twitter and so on that showed a beautiful, beautiful copper red moon pictures. And it just wasn't meant to be. Yeah, gotta wait for another century or something for that to happen again. Anyway, so that, yeah, was my story of yesterday. And this episode is, well, not brought to you by anyone else other than the my own stuff, my own business, which is the photo tours. And I'm just in the middle of preparing. This is not an ad. This is just kind of getting you up to date on what's going on here, because fall is upon us, and oh well, at least soon, and I am scrambling to get everything sorted. Next up is Ireland. The Ireland's Northwest Photo Tour will see parts of Donegal, and then we'll have an extension going over to Northern Ireland to see some of the shooting locations of Game of Thrones, which includes the Dark Hedges and some more, and of course Giant's Causeway is, yeah, it's just all very, very beautiful, brilliant stuff to see and to photograph. So this is end of August, and by the way, there's still a couple of spots open, but I'd be happy if it stays this way, but if you still want to come, that is definitely an option. Morocco is sold out for October, and we're also looking at preparing and finishing up all the reservations for Lofoten, the fantastic fjords journey, which we're going to do in September. And yeah, again, they're all now at a level where I'd be really happy if they stay this way, but we can kind of squeeze in one or two more if you're interested. It's over at discoverthetopfloor.com.
How can I get this podcast on Podcatcher Deluxe?
Podcatcher Deluxe? Good question. I don't know. I don't know Podcatcher Deluxe, but maybe someone in the community knows how to get this podcast on Podcatcher Deluxe. And yeah, has an answer. Maybe send in something to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. Yeah, just a quick follow-up to the duplicate finder thing in one of the last episodes, which yeah, kind of stumped me, and I was asking the community if you guys had an idea how to sort out the duplicates on multiple hard drives and so on. And David sent an email, and let me read that to you, because I think he has an interesting recommendation. So he writes, Chris, I'll start by saying thank you for all the great information you put out in your Tips from the Top Floor and the Future of Photography podcasts. As a self-declared avid hobbyist, I've learned a lot of valuable tips and tricks and have seen my photos progress. Awesome, awesome, awesome. As to episode 832 of Tips from the Top Floor, the first question on quickly sorting a mass of photos, I recently ran into this exact problem. I was gifted a terabyte external drive packed with years of photos that my grandparents had taken. Everything from digital scans and randomly named PDFs, docs, and PowerPoint files to the ever-so-descriptive DSC long number.jpg files, some duplicates, some original, etc. And there was some bizarre, partly organized, mostly not folder structure that photos were dumped into. In short, a general mess. Leaving the photos in place, the first thing I did was to use an app on the Mac called Gemini 2 by MacPaw at the top folder level. It took a few minutes to run, but it quickly found possible duplicates across all the folders where they were. The best part of this app is it gives the user the option of just doing a quick cleanup and will automatically delete all the duplicates, or the user can review all of the duplicates found and accept or reject files for deletion. I'll caution that the quick clean, even though it can be reviewed and undone, occasionally likes to dispose of all the duplicates and forgets to leave the original, so it's usually a good idea to review the selection for deletion. I can say that the app finds duplicates A, with different file names, and B, in various folders. I'm not entirely sure whether it finds duplicates across file formats, so if you have a JPEG and a RAW of the same file, I have not personally found a need to test this yet. After removing duplicates, I use Hazel to rename all the files, adding the date the file was created to the front of the existing file name, and sorted the files into a folder structure that made sense to me. Once that was done, I imported the files into Lightroom and processed as I normally would a typical event of shooting, focusing on making sure the folder structure made sense based on the file name and what the image actually was. I still have to go back and add tags and decide if I'll invest any time to post-processing, but I thought you could share these apps with your podcast audience if not incorporating them into your own workflow. Needless to say, I give you permission to use this email in whole or part of your podcast. David. Awesome. So this is not an ad, right? I'm not affiliated neither with Gemini 2 nor with Hazel. I haven't used Gemini 2, so I can't really say how good it is, but seemed to have worked for David, at least in the context that he described. I have used Hazel in the past. And again, these are apps on the Mac. I don't know equivalents for Windows here. So there's still enough room for anyone out there using Windows to chime in and maybe send in an email or a voicemail about this. Hazel is an interesting program, and I used it for a while to... Well, what it can do is it can watch folders. And when you throw something into those folders, it can then do actions on these files, like move them into a folder structure based on various information, like EXIF data in photos, for example. So you could build that 2017/January/blah blah and so on folder structure using that. I think the first time I used it was, you know, if you're on a Mac, the desktop is a very convenient place to save files. So on a typical Mac, there's a lot of clutter on the desktop, and Hazel kind of automates automatically file all the JPEGs into a JPEG folder and all the PDFs into a PDF folder and so on. So that kind of stuff. And that's what I've used it for in the past, kind of to even automatically sort my receipts into like a folder structure based on some OCR. It doesn't matter. It's a very powerful tool, but it's also kind of initially difficult to set up. But this combination, yeah, why not? I mean, it seems to have done the trick for David. But again, if you have any other ideas on how to handle duplicates across multiple drives in, either on the Mac or on Windows, send a voicemail, record it, and send it to voice@tfttf.com. And I'd be happy to play it here on the show.
Hey, Chris. Love the show. I had a quick question about leveling your tripod for panoramas. So I have a Mifoto road trip tripod, which works great in most situations. The one thing that it's missing for my purposes is any kind of leveling indicator on the base of the tripod. So it has one on the connector that actually connects to the camera, but that is above the ball head. So that works fine for stills, but what happens is when I go to set up a panorama, I'll try to get the base of the tripod as level as possible. I can also level the camera on top of the ball, but then what happens is as I start to pan left or right, it's evident that the base of the tripod is slightly uneven because it's on uneven ground or whatever the reason. And trying to level it in three dimensions via making the legs longer or shorter is pretty frustrating and doesn't usually work out very well. So I've looked for accessories to add to this tripod that give it a leveling device on the base with no luck. So I was curious if you had any tips for when you're using a tripod that doesn't have a leveling indicator on the base, how to get that tripod as level as possible. Is there a way to use the bubble level up above the head, or is there some other trick that maybe I haven't thought of that will help you level that out? So hopefully you have some tips for me. Hopefully that would be helpful for other people as well. But I'm curious to see what you have to say. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you, Connor. Getting a level tripod is kind of important in panorama photography. If you want to do these horizontal panoramas and your tripod is not level, then you have this sine curve motion when you go horizontally and it's all wobbly. And you can still stitch those, but you lose a lot of like space on the top and on the bottom. The first thing that came to mind is from part of my past is video tripod heads. They often have a ball under the tripod head that is explicitly there to use for leveling. And they have to do this because, well, camera heads on video camera heads, they are used for panning. And a pan in a video that is not fully horizontal looks very strange. So they do this all the time. They level their cameras all the time. So it might be worth looking into that. But also, if you're really, really serious about your panorama photography, it might be worth looking into a geared pan and tilt tripod head. And, as it says, they have gears for the three directions, and then you can really get it straight this way and then attach a separate panorama plate on top. Now, I've looked for geared tripod heads. Manfrotto makes one. And Linhof makes one, definitely for probably a bigger wallet. Arca Swiss makes the C1 Cube. Again, they look amazing, but I don't know the price. I don't really want to know the price of those. Benro makes the GD3WH. That's, rolls easily off the tongue. But one thing, and there are probably more, so just put geared tripod head in your search engine and you'll find that. And all of them have a spirit level for X and Y axes, so you can kind of make them really, really level. And then put a panorama plate on top. And a panorama plate has the sole purpose of like allowing you to rotate horizontally. So you level everything under the panorama plate with the gear tripod head, and then the camera on top is level. And you get the rotation that is truly horizontal. And you can find those if you just search for panorama plate. And there's plenty of those. And that might be the ticket. What you could also do is, of course, a bit of a cheaper avenue here. You put the camera on a panoramic plate, put that on a ball head on your tripod. And now, if your camera has a level built in, mine do, and they have a level in both directions, left, right, and forward, backward. So I can use, or you could use the level in your digital level in your camera to level it out. As long as the camera is directly on that panorama plate, you can do anything you want underneath, and as long as you get the camera flat, and then the horizontal pan will look just amazing. And that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you so much for being subscribed. And what's happening with my voice? Thank you so much. You guys are awesome. Your support means everything to me. And if you are looking for ways to support financially or just by word of mouth or any other way, go to tfttf.com/support. No, I remember. And don't forget to have a quick look at discoverthetopfloor.com. As I said, we can still squeeze in maybe one or two in some of the tours. Check it out, discoverthetopfloor.com. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, silent partner in Hans-Peter Kagerud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rapsitar, Armstead, Slack Invitations by Chief Invitations Officer, CIO Rusty Russ. Yeah, again, go visit the Slack. There's great content and great discussions going on there in a whole slew of channels, from film photography to wildlife photography, aerial, architecture, landscape, macro portraiture. There's a photo critique channel. There's a show and tell. There's a Lightroom channel. There's like everything is over on the TFTTF Slack, and you can get the link to the Slack in the show notes. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media at Chris, MarquardT. I remember that go out and take amazing photos. Rain, and I told you that be nice to each other. And happy shooting. You said it ain't as easy as it seems. Makes it easy.